You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
I've got a bone to pick with the protesters and the people involved on the war on immigration. Have you been catching what's going on in the United States, specifically Aurora, Colorado, where we had a large group of protesters come over to the ICE detention facility in Aurora, Colorado, and basically lay siege on the facility, tear down the American flag, tear down the thin blue line flag, deface the American flag, write "Blue Lives Don't Matter" in graffiti on the thin blue line flag, and then, to add insult to injury, hoist the Mexican flag.
I honestly don't even understand people's mentality with this whole immigration thing. We've talked about it 100 times, and you know, what they're doing, what you just mentioned for, is because of the, you know, proposed ICE raids, so-called raids. They're not really raids. What they're doing is just picking up people who have already been adjudicated through the courts, and the courts have issued them a declaration that they have to leave the country.
No, deportation order. It's a deportation order.
Yeah, they've had their due process. So they came in. They went through the system, and the two kinds of people that got the deportation orders are ones that, you know, were flat out refused for whatever reason. It could have been their criminal record, could have been whatever reason. And the other set of people that were issued deportation orders, and these are not new orders. These go way back. And those were people that never show up to their hearing. So all they're doing is enforcing the laws of the United States of America.
Well, you know, the theme that rings very clear to Americans is this: they don't care about the rule of law. And those people that support them, that enable them, that encourage them, and empower them, those people do not support the rule of law. This is a nation of laws. It would be anarchy without a nation of laws and the rule of law. And so part of the rule of law in these people's constitutional protected rights is to go through a court adjudication process, to be adjudicated, to get their so-called day in court. And they've all gotten their days in court. Many of them decided that there were going to be no shows to their day in court. And so fine, an automatic default and deportation order is sent to them. The other
and that's
people,
no surprise to them, because they were made aware of that when they came into the country.
Hello, yeah, and they're given all the rules, all the regulations, all the court dates, complete instructions on what to do. My God, we've got thousands of immigration attorneys, many who work pro bono or are subsidized in regular, federal programs and by private donations. And then the other people that use the attorneys have gone into court and have lost their court case, and deportation orders are immediately given to them. And like you said, Lynn, these people have been out and free on American soil for quite some time. Sometimes these people are years old with deportation orders. And so now, you know, ICE is going out. We've got about 1 million people that they need to pick up. And I'm absolutely surprised they decided only to pick up 2,000. I thought they would go out and pick up at least 10,000 during the weekend.
Well, what I'm hearing about how that the success of this has been this weekend is it's pretty marginal, because what they expect, if they have orders to pick up 2,000 people, they expect to get about 10%, so 200 people. And I don't think that they've even gotten that this weekend. And part of the reason I think for that is because they chose to broadcast that they were doing this. And I really was wondering why on earth they would broadcast that they were doing this and let everybody, you know, hide or move on or do whatever they do to avoid capture here. But I was reading an article that was talking about why President Trump decided to say that they were doing this. And, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but it had something to do with, you know, he's just making the Democrats aware that he's going through with this, because his hope is, if you recall, Ron, he gave them several weeks to, he delayed this effort, right, by several weeks so that Congress could come up with some solution. And as usual, the do-nothing Congress did nothing. So now he's back to, you know, doing the enforcement. And that is why he broadcast this, so that they would understand that, hey, we're doing this because you did nothing. And I want the American people to know we're doing this because you did nothing. And that, you know, I don't know that I still agree with it. I think that we should absolutely never broadcast anything like this. You know, in the police department, when you're going to go out and make a raid on a dope house or something, you certainly don't call them up and tell them that you're coming.
No, I completely agree. And as a person that's done hundreds and hundreds of raids, we never tell those people while we're coming. I think we need to stop pussyfooting around. I think we need to stop playing Mr. Nice Guy and stop trying to assuage the Democratic Party, the far left progressive socialists, and all the other activists and people that are enabling and supporting the illegal aliens, and simply get out there and start, you know, racking up the numbers and going out there and doing our ICE sweeps, ICE raids, ICE warrant arrests, you know, deportation orders, whatever you want to call it. What really bothers me is some of these mayors in these sanctuary state and sanctuary cities across the United States, and these people such as Garcetti from Los Angeles and his chief of police, for God's sakes, Michael Moore, and they do a little press conference on YouTube or Twitter or whatever the heck it is, and they're sitting next to each other. Just imagine this. They both take an oath of office, especially Police Chief Moore, and he's sitting there in full uniform next to his BBF, Garcetti, and they are saying, you know, their spin is, hey, this is about federalism. So what to them is federalism? Well, their spin is, look, the federal government deals with immigration where police deal with public safety. Okay, I mean, I thought all of law enforcement, whether it's state, municipal, or federal, are supposed to work together to keep the public safe. Weren't we all supposed to do that all together? Isn't that why we have these task forces that do all range of things? Isn't that why the federal government's gives, you know, millions of dollars to the Los Angeles Police Department every single year so they can work in hand with the federal government to keep citizens safe? I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. And I'll tell you what, Chief Moore needs to take off that badge or look himself in the mirror or dig up his code of ethics that he had to raise his hand up to when he became a police recruit for the Los Angeles Police Department way back when, and started having to come to Jesus with himself. But he's nothing. These chiefs of police in these sanctuary cities are nothing but puppets being manipulated by people like these mayors that are enabling and empowering these illegal aliens. It's absolutely disgraceful.
Exactly. And, you know, you and I often talk about that when they put the police department or the police chiefs under the political people in the city, you know, it just went to hell in a handbasket. And, you know, at the same time, to your point, we had Garcetti out there making a video telling all the illegals that he's standing with them. What the heck? Why are you standing with people that broke into your home? I just don't even understand the mentality here. They are not upholding the rule of law. These lawmakers were elected to uphold the rule of law, and they are supposed to work hand in hand with ICE. ICE is our immigration enforcement arm. It's just another arm of law enforcement, no different than the cop on the beat.
Well, you know, continuing to dump on Chief Moore and all these other fake police administrators, you know, Moore says, look, the LAPD will not be assisting ICE in any way. Well, okay, so what if ICE is out there on LA streets and they're picking up a bunch of MS-13 gang members that have all been given deportation orders and have been terrorizing neighborhoods, selling dope, trafficking kids, and murdering people left and right? And ICE goes out there, these federal officers go out there on LAPD public streets, and they start arresting these guys, and then the bad guys start overwhelming the ICE agents, or they start shooting them, or they start beating them or throwing bricks and rocks at them. Are you telling me, Chief Moore, that you're not going to have your people respond out there and protect these brothers and sisters that wear the badge that are trying to keep your community safe from MS-13? I'm sorry. I just don't understand this, Linda. It's a different era of police work than you and I grow up in.
What Garcetti said, and I just find it upsetting, is he told people that they don't have to open their doors to an ICE agent that doesn't have a warrant signed by a judge. I'm fine with that because, you have to have a warrant, and they do. So that's not an issue. You have a right to speak to a lawyer before signing any documents or speaking to law enforcement. And if you need help finding an attorney, they have a special number that they can call. He also told them to keep records of everything that happens between them and federal law enforcement officers and take down names and badge numbers. And he told them they were not going to assist with the ICE raids. I think that guy should be out of office tomorrow.
Well, okay, so it's so funny that you're bringing this up, hon, because I was going to tell you that Hillary Rodham Clinton just tweeted every single one of those directions to illegal aliens on how to avoid ICE apprehension. So this is a person that ran for the position of President of the United States. And if anybody is supposed to be obeying the rule of law, wouldn't you think it was the President of the United States? Can you imagine what would have happened had we elected Hillary Rodham Clinton to President of the United States? What would have happened? Okay, she just told everybody today what side she's on. And she's not on the side of the American public. She's not on the side of American citizens or American sovereignty or American safety and security. She's on the side of illegal alien criminals now who are avoiding ICE deportation orders.
There was a list put out in the last couple of days that people can look up about that. I believe it was put out by ICE or Homeland Security, one of the two. The list of crimes that people have committed since getting those deportation orders. If you look at what has happened by them not leaving, how do you justify them staying? How do you justify a Garcetti saying, hey, we've got your back, or Hillary saying that? How do you have anybody's back that, so here's another analogy. A judge would sentence a criminal, right? A criminal comes and does something, they assault somebody, they murder somebody, and a judge sentences them and says, okay, you're going to jail. And the people, the mayor and the Hillarys of the world say, well, no, they don't have to go to jail. No, you have rights. You don't have to go to jail. It's the same thing. These people were adjudicated and ordered to leave the country. And how dare any legislator in this country just stab all of us in the back this way?
Well, honey, what's going on here with this is that if you look at the, progressive socialist left, they don't believe that coming into the country is a crime. As a matter of fact, what they've been trying to do is decriminalize it. So they look at these people as not committing any crimes whatsoever. And so then if they've been deported, in other words, they didn't come into court, they failed to appear, they lost their case, whatever, it shouldn't matter, because everything that was done in the adjudication process was done fraudulently, because these people believe that people that sneak into the United States deserve to be here, and they're not committing any crimes at all.
Well, it doesn't really matter what they think, does it? It only matters what the judge said and what the court said. And the court said, no.
Well, this just completely underlines that there is an absolute war on immigration. It's more than a crisis, and you and I have been talking about this for quite some time. It's an actual war. Hey, but let's go take our second cup of coffee.
Okay.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, as usual, a fantastic cup of coffee. Hey, let's talk about the squad.
And I don't mean squad.
And I don't mean the mod squad.
The mod squad. It's more like the mob squad.
It is the mob squad. So let's talk about who the squad is. So, you know, some of our friends, Linda, when we talk to them, they don't know what the heck we're referring to. So the squad is, I think, probably led by AOC, who's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Puerto Rican female, congresswoman, newly elected from Queens in the city of New York, Rashida Tlaib, Palestinian female, born in the United States, congresswoman representing Detroit, Michigan, Ihan Omar, Somali, from Somalia, came to the United States many years ago with her folks. She's a congressional representative out of the state of Minnesota. And then the new one, who is, I think, really trying hard to be the most radical one, and that's Ayanna Pressley, black female, American, born and bred in the United States from the state of Massachusetts. So that's our squad, far socialist, progressive less, and very radical in the party.
Yeah, they are very radical. I think that they're vying to see who can be the most radical. But besides being radical, in my opinion, they're completely dishonest. In the tweets that they put out that mislead people, what they said about what was going on at the border was completely incorrect and just misleading information for America. I think that that's really, really irresponsible for somebody elected to our government to go into our government and mislead the American people and really flat out lie to them about things. I understand that they have a different point of view, that for some unknown reason to me, they want open borders, they want healthcare to be a right, they want to give everybody money, they want to do all these things that, you know, probably you and I don't agree with. And they're entitled to their opinion, but what they're not entitled to is to disrespect we the people with lies about what the truth is about what is going on.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. You know, and they are taking their radicalism to new heights because they have decided to take on the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who you and I can't stand, to be quite honest. But they've accused her, of all people, of being a racist. I mean, even President Trump, who there is no love lost for Nancy Pelosi, is come to her defense. And I think what's going on, I'm starting to see a rift in the Democratic Party. I think a lot of people are starting to see this rift at a very critical time when we got the 2020 election right around the corner. And these four people are starting to tear the Democratic Party apart. And as a result, they're starting to get marginalized by, you know, high-placed Democrats, politician, and their staff. So they really don't do themselves any good whatsoever. And most everything that comes out of their mouth are complete lies and fraud.
Well, and hypocrisy, because Ocasio-Cortez says that she's insulted that the rub of it all, she says, Mr. President, is that you're not accepting that America elected us and you can't accept that we don't fear you. No, hello?
Yeah,
how about you don't accept that he got elected?
Well, that's
how does this not work the other way?
Well, okay, so look what we've seen. Look what we saw during the 2016 election and all the false narratives and the fraud and the resist movement and the secret stuff going on with DOJ and the FBI and NSA and the CIA against Donald Trump and his campaign. And of course, we've been suffering through the results of that ever since, Trump got elected. And so now these people are just continuing that false narrative. This is a continuance of the resist movement. But now what they're trying to do is move the old politicians out of Washington, D.C. They're going to try to remove them for political power. And every single one of the gang of four or the, mob squad.
The squad.
Okay. They are dedicated and committed to doing this, and they're not going to stop. I heard Anaya Pressley just talking the other day and said, hey, look, if you don't want to get involved in this fight, don't even bother to come with us and go on our campaign stops and our protest stops, because we don't want you. In other words, we only want radical people. And where the Democratic Party and the leadership in the Democratic Party have always tried to work things out with each other to move their agenda forward, these four people are, zero tolerance people. So they're not there to try to compromise with anybody. They're not trying to get along with anybody. They're trying to start a radical revolution with Americans on the progressive left side against the staunch bulwarks of the Democratic Party, like the Pelosi's, like the Schumer's, people like that. And who is supporting them? Another socialist communist, Bernie Sanders.
Right. Bernie says that they are the future of the Democratic Party, and that should scare everyone. What they are bringing back into America that Obama started, in my opinion, is this whole racist conversation. Every other word that we hear in this country is the word racist. We are all called racist. And now we're called, white nationalists. So Ilhan Omar accused Trump of stoking white nationalism. How do you even get that? This is a president that has brought up every single race in this country in their economy, in their opportunities, more so than any president that I can remember. So how could you say that he's stoking white nationalism? He never has expressed any racism that I've heard, so I don't understand the comments. But if you say it long enough and you say it loud enough, the people that are uninformed and that don't listen or pay attention or read or inform themselves believe what you're saying, and that's what they're counting on.
Well, no, you're exactly right, Linda. And if you take a look at all of the different things that President Trump and his administration have done, believe me, they've been completely inclusive, gender-wise, people of color, different cultures, you name it. And he and his administration have raised this country up significantly from where we were in the abyss of the Obama-Biden days. But if you're from the socialist progressive left, that's a very scary thing. It's just so terrible when our economy is booming. Like you said, Linda, more, people of color have got employment than ever before. And the more millions of people that are allowed into this country illegally, the sooner they'll get amnesty, the sooner they'll get the right to vote, and the sooner the entire culture, values, and structure of a democratic nation with the values of the United States will be destroyed. And don't forget, it's been said time and time again, you can't beat the United States by war. The only thing that you can do to beat the United States is the United States beats itself from inside. Okay, so the revolution taking place in the United States, within the United States, and the United States falling because of a third column which are the progressive left and the socialists and the communists, like the Bernie Sanders and like the like the Gang of Four.
Well, and you know, it's getting to the point where it's like the 20 people running for president as well. And Donald Trump, you know, he put out a tweet because he loves his Twitter, and he said that these Democratic congresswomen should go back to the countries, perhaps for a while, that they came from, whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, and who are corrupt and inept, and, you know, see if they can help them rather than try to reinvent, you know, what's working here in America. And then, of course, you know, it gives them fodder to go after him, and then Pelosi jumps in, and, you know, it just becomes this ridiculous cat fight. And you know what, Ron? I'm sure that a lot of American people feel the way that I do and you do, and I'm assuming that you feel that way. This is just tedious. I'm tired of all of this garbage going back and forth. I'm tired of the never-ending Mueller garbage. Can't we just move on with our country and get in some direction where we can get things done? We have done nothing with this Congress. This is just abysmal.
I think it is, at least in my lifetime, it is singularly the worst Congress that we've ever had. I can't think of another Congress where literally nothing has been accomplished. Can you think of one thing that Congress came together on that they accomplished? One thing.
Well, they finally, even begrudgingly, which is amazing, you know, gave the money for upgrading the detention centers.
Oh, no, but wait a minute.
That's really about it.
Okay, but wait a minute. I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Okay, so factually, what you're saying is right. Okay, they did vote for that money. And by the way, what four members didn't vote for the money? The squad.
But the ones who complain that the centers are so bad.
Right, but Linda, they didn't come together. They didn't come together. Okay, people voted against it, and it was only because the Republicans, of course, unanimously voted for it, that it was passed. So they didn't come together. What they did is they outvoted the people that were against it. Okay, so enough people voted against it to support my argument that they didn't come together. You see where I'm coming from on this?
Well, I mean, in the Congress, they passed a version that the Senate said, no, we don't like your version. Here's our version. They passed a version. They sent that back down to the House, and Pelosi got that version passed. I mean, they continue to forward and advance this talk about race. They continue to say things like, you know, women of color are this, women of color are that, as though they are being singled out because of their color rather than because of their far left progressive thoughts and views. And just to bring that conversation around, you know, that's a whole nother subject that is very tedious for me. I'm tired of hearing the whole racist thing. I'm tired of people using color. Why do we have to mention color ever? And I was reading, and you know, I mentioned to you, and I think you read the same thing about the new James Bond.
Oh, I want to talk about the new James Bond. Are you ready to get into that conversation?
It all ties in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we can switch up and get into something really cool, because you know me, I'm a huge James Bond fan. I think ever since I was about 13 or 14 years old, read every single Ian Fleming book on James Bond, seen every single movie. And by the way, Jeopardy quiz question, Linda, how many James Bond movies have there been?
I have no idea, so I'm going to throw out a wild guess of 11.
You are so off. Okay, there have literally been 24 James Bond movies. Somebody is going to become the new 007. And so they're looking at a couple of people. Now, one of the people who has been thrown out there, extremely surprising, is actually a black female. And her name is Lashana Lynch. And I don't know if you're into the Avenger movies and Captain America and Captain Marvel, but she was one of the main players in the last Captain Marvel movie. All right. And so they're looking at her. But let's talk.
Ron, I'm going to correct you there. They're not looking at her. She is filming the movie as we speak.
Oh, well, thank you. You know more about it than I do.
Yeah, she's filming in the UK and Italy, and she actually is the new 007. And they're going to bring Daniel Craig in from retirement to introduce her as the new 007.
Okay.
Well, in this movie. But I just think it's still such a shame. But the thing that struck me about this whole James Bond issue was, you know, before they decided who was going to do it, which they have now landed on this person, Lashana Lynch.
And she's British, right? Is she British?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure she's British.
She is yeah. A London
okay.
native, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Before that, one of the people that they looked at was the actor Idris Elba.
And you know what? I love him. He is a great actor. He's a black man, and he's also British.
Well, and what kind of I was interested in this story, because the reason that he did not be James Bond, which I agree with you, he would have made a great 007 type of character, but he felt that people would only look at him, his success or his lack of success would only be looked at through the prism of color, and that it would only be because people look at the color of his skin, and he didn't want to put himself in that position. And that is the thing that I want to talk to you about, because I think that that's a true shame. And I think that the conversation in our country at this time, again, that I feel that Obama really just brought to the forefront and made a race issue where there was none. And now we are perpetuating that myth that there's a big race issue where there is none, and making it be as though there is one, that he would have to turn down a role. The truth is that about half of all people surveyed said they would love to see a black 007 agent. They have no problem with it. And, you know, if you get 50% of anything today in today's, you know, world where you talk to people about things, you're doing really well. And then they asked if people would mind if it was a woman. And I don't actually know what they ended up saying about that. The thing is, why do we have to ask? Why do we have to put anything through the prism of color? I don't care if this 007 is a man, a woman, a black, a white, a Hispanic. I don't care. What I care is that they do a really great acting job and that I'm immersed in that movie and that character while I'm watching it. That's all that I care about. And I believe that of most people. So why we have to look at this through this color prism is something that really bothers me.
Well, I'm going to disagree on one thing. All right. Again, I'm a huge James Bond fanatic. And like I said, ever since I was a young teenager, I do not see James Bond as a woman. I just
Well, but it's not a woman. It's a 007 agent. James Bond is not a woman.
Well, you know what I mean by that. Okay. I don't see, thank you for correcting me, Linda. I don't see, darn girl, I don't see, you do this to me like every night, okay? You do it all the time. There's one time or another, you know, beyond our little coffee conversation. But anyway, listen, what I'm trying to say is I don't see James Bond as a female. I'm not saying that I don't love females in that type of role. You know, I love like the movies like Nikita, the series, all of those types of things, but I mean, leave James Bond alone, for God's sakes, okay? Women have got a lot of other roles that they can do. Just leave my James Bond alone. Leave my 007 alone. But let's talk in just a couple of minutes about the issue that you brought up, which I think is a very important issue, and that is the way we are looking at things more increasingly through the prism of color. And I just want to do that after we have our last cup of coffee.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli. forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. Well, we're back with our third cup of coffee.
Well, we were talking about James Bond, and you remember Thunderball, right?
Of course I remember Thunderball, Sean Connery, but you know, they did it twice. Okay, so Thunderball, the first time and the best time, was done with Sean Connery.
Well, I'm going to give you the best time. The best time is Operation Thunderball was just completed, and it's not a scheme by a James Bond villain, but it's Interpol's largest ever coordinated seizure in history, capturing wildlife traffickers and their specimens that they gain illegally. So it involved 109 countries and resulted in nearly 2,000 seizures of protected wildlife. So people, you know, they hunt rhino or elephants or a lot of things that I'm surprised. There's a lot of flora and fauna that they also grab that are endangered. And all of this is included in this Operation Thunderball. So in that those seizures, they got 440 ivory pieces, more than 4,300 living birds, nearly 10,000 live turtles and tortoises, and lots of, like I said, flora and fauna. This was the largest take of this kind that has happened. Last year's wasn't quite as big, so this year they really did a great job in capturing a lot of people and putting them behind bars that are targeting endangered species. And did you know that trafficking of wildlife is the third largest criminal enterprise in the world behind drugs and firearms?
No, you know, I didn't know that, but I will tell you, I just can't stand the people that go out and do the trophy hunting with all these exotic animals. Now, I understand there has to be conservation, and I'm a great conservationist, big believer in conservation. But this stuff about hunting elephants and rhinos and some of these more exotic species, I'm sorry, I am totally against it. And I think we should just leave these animals be. And certainly, I would love to see people go to prison for trafficking in wild animals and things like ivory and all of that. It just really bothers me.
Well, and that's what they do take. They take ivory, but they also take shark fins,
yes.
Rhino horns.
Yes.
And the scales on this little small mammal, and I know that if you saw it, you'd know what it is, but it's called a pangolin, and it's like a little... I don't know, kind of an armadillo-ish, very small animal that has these big scales, and they dry the scales, and the Chinese use them for all different things, kind of medicinal things.
Sure, so they, apothecary kind of stuff.
Yeah,
they
roast them, they cook them in oil, they cook them in butter, they even cook them in urine.
Ew.
And they use them for things like nervousness and hysterical crying in children and women possessed by devils.
I'll tell you what, if I ate that kind of stuff, I would be possessed by devils, okay?
I know. Well, they also gained 23 live primates, 30 big cats.
Good.
More than a ton of those pangolin scales, 74 truckloads of timber, 2,600 plants, and 10,000 marine species. This was a huge multinational effort. And, you know, good for them. They just really made a difference in this type of crime. And what was kind of encouraging is that this year they got much less of the rhino tusks because they had really tried to crack down on that. And also the African elephant poaching has fallen by more than 50%. So that was really good news. And just, you know, on the same token, Ron, as far as good news, because that's what I'm about right now is good news. The rhino population, you know, has been significantly decreasing in the world for some time. And a lot of that is due to poaching.
Right. So, well, you know why they want the rhino horns, right? The Chinese and in other countries, they take the rhino horn and they powder it down and they use it as an aphrodisiac. So can you imagine killing an entire beautiful animal like a rhinoceros just to get a hard-on? Okay? I mean,
well, And I wonder, I mean, I'm just really curious about that. I'd have to read up. Does that really work? Is it a myth or is it a fact?
No, but it's all BS. It's a myth. But the thing is that you kill an entire animal for something like that.
And a then, huge, you know,
yeah,
animal.
And, you know, you're talking about the shark fins. Well, they use again, it's an Asian thing. They take the shark fins and they make shark fin soup out of it. But here's what the people don't know. They grab the sharks and then they bring them into the boat, they cut the fin off, and then they throw the poor animal back into the water. Okay? I mean, it's just absolutely disgraceful.
Well, where they can't swim properly and defend themselves anymore,
die.
So they become prey.
Right. They end up dying.
Well, Tanzania had only 15 rhinos 4 years ago. And that was like ground zero of the poaching crisis. But now the figure is said to be 167. So that's 1,000% increase.
Right.
And, you know, that's good news. 167 is nothing, but it's sure a lot better than 15. And if we keep this up and we don't allow the poachers there, then it's only going to increase. So I thought those were really good news. I love good news stories about saving animals.
Well, you know, I've got an environmental story just to sort of piggyback on your conservation story. And that is that the European Union has just voted to ban single-use plastics. And, of course, this vote needs to be ratified, needs to be voted on again, and, you know, for a ratification vote. But they're looking at enacting the ban, having it going into effect by 2021. And they've outlined 10 different plastic things that they want to ban. So, and it's stuff that we use all the time. So water bottles and plastic straws and plastic utensils and coffee stirrers. And there's three or four other ones. They banned 10 different things. And Linda, you're involved with promotional products. I know that when they started banning straws and plastic bags in California, all of a sudden people that make promotional products, you're a broker, but you deal with all the people that make promotional products, they started developing straws that you could use over and over again. And they started doing hemp bags and bags made out of plastic that were reusable plastic, like from plastic bottles and all sorts of stuff. So I'm just giving you a heads up that there is, in Europe, there will be a tremendous need for things to replace these reusable plastic things.
Well, you know, and I agree with getting rid of a lot of those plastics, because really we have so much plastic junk that nobody needs. And there's two little girls that I saw in a story, and they're in, I want to say that they're in England, that have a little thing going against McDonald's with the little toy that they give the kids
right.
in the Happy Meal,
right?
Because they say, you know, that it's just, they give away so many of them that it's just absolutely a waste of, you know, money, and that it's just plastic pollution. I totally agree with that. And I also saw a story while we're on good news, because you and I have talked many times about the huge trash pile in the Pacific Ocean, right?
Well, there are several gigantic islands of trash, which are predominantly plastic trash in several areas of the world, obviously all in the ocean. And I think it's wherever the oceans merge together and
their currents merge.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm looking for. The currents, and they kind of go circularly, and they make these gigantic islands that are as big as, I can't remember which state it was as big as, but it's as big as a couple of states.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Ocean Voyages Institute before, right, that were removing that plastic. And they have successfully removed more than 40 tons of fishing nets and plastics from that area known as the North Pacific Subtropical Convergence Zone, which is more commonly known, as you and I call it, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. So 40 tons is a lot of stuff. I don't think it makes a dent, but it makes a tiny dent, and it, you know, it can only help because when I first saw that, I was appalled that that's where all this plastic is going, and it really made me think about it. And, you know, you and I talked about, okay, we're not going to drink water out of plastic bottles anymore.
Right.
But yet we've had to for a while until we live on well water, and we've had a lot of rain in Texas, and the wells tend to get bacteria sometimes when we get this condition. So you really have to depend on something else. And so now, you know, we're putting in a system in the house which will, you know, reverse osmosis, that will make sure that we always have clean water regardless of the condition of the well.
Exactly. And we don't have to use the plastic water bottles anymore. And one of the things, and thanks to Linda and Perform a Graphic Print Source, we have, give you a little plug there. Give you a little plug. We've got some of the most amazing plastic and aluminum, and I mean, you name the thing. We have got the coolest water bottles. We must have 100 water bottles in the house for every different kind of backpacking thing and kayaking thing and driving in the car. And so I really appreciate that, Linda. So,
well, I'll tell you something about the water bottles. I am not a fan of water bottles, and shame on me for saying that, just for my own personal self. However, when they started making the water bottles that will keep your ice water cold the entire day into the next day, I was totally sold, because I like drinking my water cold.
Me too.
And so those are the water bottles that I keep. I don't tend to keep the plastic ones or the ones made out of forget the other stuff, but not plastic, but that kind of thing that has no insulation in it, then I'm not interested. But boy, give me something that keeps my coffee hot or my water cold, and I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, listen, I've got something else that's kind of interesting, and since we're dealing with animals and ecology and all of that right now, the Tennessee police are warning people in Tennessee against flushing their methamphetamine down the toilet because they are worried that people are creating meth alligators. Okay? Meth alligators.
Well, I wonder what that would look like.
Well, you know, Linda, I would just like to know why people would flush perfectly good meth down the toilet. But no,
don't even get me started.
But this comes from the Loretta Police Department in Tennessee. This is a real story. And after investigators stated that they caught somebody actually attempting to flush meth down with, of course, several items of drug paraphernalia, which means to me that they've probably hit the guy's house, and you and I have hit a few houses in our time, and all the dope goes down the toilet and flush, flush, flush before we can get there. But they're worried about it going out into the sewer system and creating the meth alligators. Hey, it's bad enough dealing with people under the influence of meth other than an alligator under the influence of meth.
I can't even imagine.
I thought I'd just throw that out there.
I guess you have to really be curious to think what I don't know. Would they react to it? I mean,
of course they would.
They'd have to.
Of course they would. So anyway, so what do you got to compare with meth alligators?
Well, I am sorry that I don't have a lot, but I think that there was a good news story at Chick-fil-A, and you and I are big Chick-fil-A fans.
Yes, we are.
And they had a worker there who, you know, just a teenage boy working in Chick-fil-A, And he heard a woman in the line outside in the drive-thru kind of getting anxious and yelling. Her six-year-old son had gotten his seatbelt wrapped around his neck. Only boys can do this, Ron, I swear. and he was losing color, and the mother was panicking. And this kid literally jumped right through the drive-thru window, opened the door of that car, and cut that child free with his little pocket knife. And so good for him. That's a really good news story. And his name was Logan Simmons. You have to give him some credit. It happened in Hall County, Georgia. And, you know, there just are good people out there who aren't afraid to act at a moment's notice instead of stand there and watch something happen and be a bystander. There are still those people that make such a difference to other people's lives.
And speaking of Chick-fil-A and making a difference in people's lives, I have a hero of the day. And it's the Chick-fil-A manager in Severn, Maryland. And the guy's name is Daryl Howard. So he's the manager of Chick-fil-A. And they have a regular customer by the name of Mr. Lee. That's the only name they call him, Mr. Lee. And he's a 96-year-old World War II veteran. And poor Mr. Lee's tire went completely flat. And he, you know, needed to get to Chick-fil-A to get his meal. And he shows up about 3-4 times a week there. But he drove it on, you know, almost on the rim. And so when he pulled into Chick-fil-A, only on 3 tires and a rim.
He was hungry.
This guy, I'm telling you what, that's how good the food is there, okay? So Daryl Howard sees this guy, speaking of drive-up windows, he sees the guy pull into Chick-fil-A on 3 tires and a rim and says, ah, we can't have that. So he goes outside. Thank God Mr. Lee had a spare tire in the trunk, and he just stripped off his shirt and got down there and changed Mr. Lee's car tire and gave him a free meal and sent him off on his way. So, Daryl Howard, you're my Chick-fil-A hero of the day.
Well, so that's 2 Chick-fil-A heroes of the day, which is great.
Yeah.
Because you know what? They have a spirit at Chick-fil-A that just spreads through their entire organization. That's somewhat different than a lot of other organizations. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. And Linda, finally, speaking of heroes of the day, you're my...
Oh, I have a hero.
Well, wait a minute. You're my hero of the day. Because because you're a... and going all the way back to, animals and conservation, you saved a snake in the front yard, and I just thought you'd share that story with me, okay? Because I heard it from Chris, our son-in-law.
Well, I was outside with Desi Dog, and Desi tends to snoop around a little bit in the yard, and, you know, we live on some acreage, so there's snakes and there's different creatures out here a lot, and lo and behold, she's sniffing, and I look to see what she's sniffing at, and it's about a 4-foot snake, but he was all entangled in the mesh. I don't know what you call it.
That plastic mesh to keep the deer out of the flowers.
Right, but it's very thin, and he was just so tangled, and it was just squeezing him and kind of cutting into him, and I don't know how long he'd been there. He was barely visible. You know, he was in a place where snakes are not out there to be seen most of the time, so you got to really look for them, and they blend in. And he'd probably been there for days and just miserable in the high heat. But I thought he was a rattlesnake, and I was home alone, so I wasn't going to, you know, go pick up his head or anything. But just as fate would have it, Ron, I walked into the house, and somebody knocked at the front door. Well, you can't get on our property.
Right, unless you go through the electronic gate, so you got to know how to do that.
So you got to know. So it had to be somebody that I knew, and sure enough, it was our son-in-law, Chris. And so I took him out and showed him the snake. Well, as fate again would have it, you and I and Chris and Karen all went to a snake seminar just a few weeks back, and we learned like everything you ever want to know about snakes.
Because the Martinelli family has nothing better to do on a Tuesday night than to go see a snake seminar.
But it was fascinating, and we got to hold lots of different kinds of snakes, and we learned about the ones that are, you know, venomous and the ones that are not, and what makes them, you know, bite you, and what happens if they bite you, all those things. So we kind of got a stick to kind of try to see the snake's tail to see if it was a rattlesnake, and it was not a rattlesnake, which was very good news. Chris kind of manipulated the snake a bit so that he could grab his head, and I cut the mesh so that we could at least pick him up. And so Chris held that snake and his whole body trailing down, but he was so wrapped up. And I spent probably 30 minutes cutting every little piece of that stuff, cutting into that snake off of him, piece by piece.
And boy, he must have been really wrapped up in that thing.
He was very wrapped up. And, you know, they can't have their scales damaged because right. that leads to infection and different
right.
problems.
Right.
I'll tell you what, Ron, if a snake could ever look at you and understand that you were trying to help him, that snake did. I just really felt like he understood that we were helping him, and he really stayed very still and didn't give us a hard time. I got every bit of it off of him, and Chris walked him out to the more wild part of the property and put him down and watched him for a bit, but he didn't move, and we didn't know, you know, how really damaged or sick he was from this experience. But about 10 minutes later, we went back out, and he had crawled away, so I guess that, you know, he probably survived. And I felt really good about that. The snakes are good things to have around, and there's no reason to let any kind of animal die a horrible death like that.
Well, Linda, there's not too many women that I know that would go out there and do what you did, and that's why you, my darling, are my hero of the day.
Okay. Well, I need to tell you about a much better hero than me, Ron. There's a young man, 20 years old, Derek Bird, who woke up to some noise in the house and realized that the house was on fire. He was upstairs. He ran to his sister's room and kicked the door in, and there was small kids in the house. He ran downstairs through the fire to get outside underneath the second story window so that she could drop the kids down to him. He caught, I think, two of the kids. He caught a six-year-old and a three-year-old, and then his sister herself fell off the roof, but she was okay. And there was a third child, an eight-year-old little girl, who fell back into the room. So now she's in the burning house by herself upstairs. This young man ran right back upstairs through that fire, wrapped a t-shirt around that little girl, and ran through the fire downstairs again as fast as he could to get everybody out. And he saved everybody in that house.
Oh, wow.
He himself suffered second and third degree burns. He said he would do it again in a heartbeat. And he is my hero.
Wow. Well, that's a fantastic story. So we end up with a few heroes tonight, Lynn. So how about you and I, now that the coffee is done, why don't we get out for a little late Chick-fil-A and celebrate?
That sounds wonderful.
Okay.